This is an ABC podcast.
The other day I was sitting in my study, typing away deep into a story when the power cut out and my computer shut down. My work was gone and I was left feeling frustrated, like I always am whenever there is a blackout here. In Papua New Guinea, it's a feeling people know all too well. Power cuts aren't just an inconvenience, they're a constant. Some last for hours, others stretch into days, even weeks.
The parts of Papua New Guinea, like New Island, some of our lecturers went there. They saw that, you know, they receive power only twice a week. Only maybe Tuesdays and Fridays, power will come on. The other days, there's no power.
For businesses, that means lost income. For hospitals, it puts patients at risk.
When you talk about power, we are talking about life and death. So especially in the surgical room, when there is a life-threatening surgery going on.
So why is the PNG government keeping its citizens literally in the dark? Hi, I'm Scott Whitey, and this is Polytalk, where I'll take you behind the scenes of Pacific politics and how it affects us. I'll speak with politicians from across the region and with everyday people about the political experiences that shape us. Today on Polytalk, PNG is a country bursting with natural energy resources. But people live never knowing when the power might go out, making life unpredictable and unstable. I'll speak to oncology nurse Peter Forey about how power cuts threaten the lives of his patients.
When there is power outages, it makes my work really difficult. When there is blackouts, you will have to consider life and death.
And you'll hear from Papua New Guinea's Energy Minister, Thomas Opa.
We receive a lot of complaints, but basically it's not a problem of generation. It's not a problem that we have with power. It is a problem of constant supply.
At the Port Moresby General Hospital, Peter Forrest spends his days caring for some of the sickest patients, the ones with cancer.
My name is Peter. I am a registered nurse and also specializing in oncology care. I do chemotherapy for especially the gynecology cancers.
Peter's patients rely on a constant power supply, but at least once a week, the power cuts out and the oncology ward shuts down.
Some of the patients, we do run their chemo using the infusion pumps. When there is blackout, it makes it very difficult for us. When there is power, it makes everything possible.
Peter, how long have you worked as an oncology nurse?
I've been working in the field almost 6 years now.
What happens at the Port Moresby General Hospital when the power cuts out?
Power is very important, especially in the hospital. For our surgeries, like those ones going for surgery, like when there is blackouts, it normally affects the surgical procedure. The other areas, like where we normally do infusions, the infusions, when there is blackout, we cannot do anything. We just have to wait for the electricity to come back. We do use the computers or appliances that most of the blackout has caused so many damages to our appliances as well.
How do you feel when this happens?
When there is power outages, it makes my work really difficult. And most of the time, we spend long hours. Normally, we have 8-hour shifts. When such happens, we are running 2 hours or 3 hours behind our scheduled times. The extra hours, they are not compensated. It's a frustration for us as well.
Papua New Guinea's government runs a lot of key services for the country, like PNG Power, which runs the electricity grid, PNG Water, overseeing water services, Air New Guinea, the national airline, just to name a few. They're known as state-owned enterprises, a business entity created or owned by the country's government. All of these provide important services, but PNG Power has often been in the spotlight because of the constant blackouts and the chaos it creates.
Oh, it's gotten worse. It's gotten bad. like growing up, I'm a Moresby kid. I grew up in Moresby. We did have blackouts then, but not as bad as today.
Manu Rawali is the coordinator for the University of Papua New Guinea's Center for Renewable Energy and is an expert on PNG power systems.
My background's in applied physics. Over the years, I got more into focused onto solar panels, solar cells, the science, the physics of solar cells. And then that kind of drifted me towards the application of it. And then eventually got my eyes open to realize, oh, shit, we've got a problem with electricity in PNG.
Manu, how would you describe PNG power's situation at the moment?
The electricity supply has gotten worse. And then as you head out towards the smaller towns, the smaller grids, oh man, those guys, it's almost half a day they don't have electricity. And at times they have no electricity for up to, weeks without electricity. So it's gotten worse, I'll put it that way.
And how is Papua New Guinea generating its power at the moment?
We did our own internal analysis some years back. At the time when we did it in 2022, PPL's grid in 2022 was about, I think, 60% thermal, fossil fuel. That's both diesel and gas, and 30% renewables, majority of it hydro. But that was before Edivu was introduced.
Edivu is the new hydro plant that's been built along the Brown River area outside of Port Moresby.
So when Edivu was introduced, we did some just high-level analysis. It's about 50-50. But even then, we compare it to the early 80s. In the early 80s, I think the renewable supply into the grid, and mind you, that the grid was smaller at the time, but still on statistics, it was about 70 plus renewables as compared to diesel. But then over the years, we've moved in the opposite direction. So we're probably one of the only countries that moved in the opposite direction.
Why has PNG's reliance on renewables gone backwards?
No, so it wasn't so much a move away from renewables. The demand started increasing. We never wanted to explore into our, like, you know, to establish new renewables. After the one at Ramu, the one at Rona, the one at Gazelle, after those ones were developed, and this was around the 70s and 80s, there hasn't been any major hydro development since then until the recent one, Edivu. The quick fix was diesel, and then we got so used to using diesel. No one bothered to look into solar. We talked about it. We talk about it a lot. Even to this day, it's still slow.
So PNG has about 50% of its power coming from gas and diesel and 50% from renewables. What about the grid itself and how this energy actually gets into people's homes and businesses? What does that look like?
PNG is very, this is where PNG is very unique to many other countries. 80% of our population is off-grid, 20% in urban towns. That's where they're connected to the grid. Majority are off-grid. So countries like Samoa, Fiji, they're relatively small compared to PNG. So they've been able to increase their, you know, electricity access easily. You know, Australia has the money. So you've been able to have, like, the eastern part of Australia is all connected. Whereas PNG, one, we didn't have the money. Two, our populations are scattered sparsely over rugged terrain and islands. So it's just impossible to follow the conventional method. It's impossible. With the sort of structure, the terrain and the population distribution, it's impossible to get the electricity grid to everywhere in PNG.
So because of PNG's geography with very remote villages and rugged mountainous terrain, only those really in the urban areas have access to the electricity grid.
I looked recently at the budgets for 2024 to 2028. This was released by the Treasury Office, and almost $1 billion was put forward for PNG power. For the 20% of the population. And for the off-grid, guess how much was budgeted for 2024 to 2020, projected budget? 15 million kina. It's just a huge huge difference.
So there's a big discrepancy between resources put towards those that are on the grid. What about the actual infrastructure that powers the grid?
If you go into many of the PPL power stations, it's practically black. If you've seen one of those power stations from PNG, oh, you've practically seen the whole lot of them all around the country, even in the 17 small mini grids to the big, large systems in the three main grids. They all look alike. They're all black.
And when you say black, what does that mean? It's covered in oil?
The oil that, like, they've just let it spill all around the power station. We've got fuel leaks here and there. We've got cannibalized generators. Actually, that's the common side. Cannibalized generators. They're using them as parts for the other generators.
Now, overseeing all of this is PNG Power, a state-owned enterprise which is run by Papua New Guinea's government. How do these blackouts reflect on the government?
Not so good. Definitely not so good. It just shows, I think it just highlights, again, on the fact that, you know, electricity is a need. It's now, like, when everyone, I think globally now, we know electricity is a need. Communities need electricity to develop. Unfortunately, that concept has been slow on the key decision makers. They're slowly trying to get to it, but it appears that the more that they're trying to put their hands on things, it's just getting worse. Being a state-owned entity, unfortunately, doesn't look good on the state, that their state-owned entity is just, you know, the services are getting out of hand.
Way back in the early 2000s, Papua New Guinea had what it called the Electricity Commission, which had financial issues and problems getting power to the country. So the PNG government corporatized the Electricity Commission and turned it into PNG Power, hoping that a corporate influence might get its financial issues sorted and the power back up and running in PNG. But Manu says that hasn't been the case.
They've had, since 2002 when they were established, they've had, I think, 14 or 15 CEOs. So they've had changes in heads. When you have a change in the head of the organization, it changes just the whole direction of the organization. And that's basically what's happened. I've worked in the sector for almost a decade now, and I feel that the decisions in how it manages itself have been influenced by non-technical people. I'll put it this way. That's how decisions have been made. It hasn't been purely business. It hasn't been purely engineering. It's just purely made by people outside of the sector.
Polytalk has reached out to PNG Power for comment, but we have not received a reply. While PNG Power is run as a corporation with a CEO, overseeing it all is Papua New Guinea's government and the Minister for State Enterprises. Polytalk reached out to invite him for an interview, but we have not gotten a reply. But we reached out to Papua New Guinea's Minister for Energy, who did agree to speak.
My name is Honorable Thomas Opa. I'm the member for Kerama, and I am also the Minister for Energy in the Marape Rosso government at the moment here.
How would you describe the state of energy and power in Papua New Guinea at the moment?
I would say we in the legislative space, we are deregulating the sector. The sector is becoming an exciting space for us as a government and as a country, despite the challenges and issues that we face with our power company, PNG Power. But otherwise, it's exciting times in the energy sector, and this is a space where the sector where we have come up with the right legislations, the right policies, the regulations, all those things we've put in place now.
PNG's electricity network is highly unreliable, leading to blackouts that affect many people. How have these blackouts affected you personally and your constituents?
Yes, of course, the blackouts are terrible in many parts. In Port Moresby, back in Kerama, we have issues with our power supply. Most times, it is not an issue of generation. We have PNG Power has put in place a 1 megawatt genset in the facility. The problem now is that the reliable supply of diesel fuel into the facility on a constant and regular basis, so that it can be able to power up the power station for Kerama Town, and many a times Kerama Town less residents left without power. We receive a lot of complaints, but basically it's not a problem of generation. It's not a problem that we have with power, power generation in terms of gensets. It is a problem of constant supply. So given that my district, Kerama town is within my district, one of the biggest hurdles that we face is that we come under what you call a C center. So we are classified as a C center by PNG Power, and basically we are a more like a community or social responsibility CSO, corporate social responsibility for PNG Power. They basically do not make any profit or money out of these C centers, but they have an obligation to fulfill, to ensure they provide power. I think that's the crux of the problem that we face, not only in Kerama, but many parts of where the C centers operate from.
PNG Power runs Papua New Guinea's electricity grid, which is a state-owned enterprise. Why hasn't the PNG government been able to provide stable power to the country?
For Port Moresby grid now, we are generating 300 megawatts of power, electricity. And edible supplies around 50, up to 50 megawatts. We've got Rona that also supplies up to 50. We've got Dirio that also supplies 50. And we've got new power that supplies another 50 megawatt. So, and then the solar, solar and some diesel. And so a total of about 300 megawatt to supply the Port Moresby grid. And I understand PPL have been doing some upgrades in its substations, upgrade. So you can generate the power, but if you have aging infrastructure, those power that you generate means nothing, because the aging infrastructure cannot cater for the power that you generate. So there's some of the reasons why, because of the aging infrastructure, we as PNG Power, as a government, we really need to invest in PNG Power to upgrade all these aging infrastructure, substations, distribution lines, high voltage lines to places, because power does not just move. As power goes from point A to point B, it reduces in its capacity. So there are many things that are so technical that we really need to get right.
While you don't oversee the portfolio of state enterprises as energy minister, what is it that you are doing to change this and restore reliable energy to the country?
So as the energy minister, yes, we are greatly concerned about the issues facing PNG Power. What we are trying to do is work with the as energy minister. My job is to implement the national energy rollout plan, which is a government policy that tries to make sure that we give power or all of Papua New Guinea, 70% of Papua New Guineans can be able to have access to power by 2030. And so it is a very ambitious target to reach. So we're in 2025 now, and we've got 5 more years. And many times when I talk about this government policy, many people laugh at me and they think, oh, it's not possible. But, as a government, we have to have a vision and we have to have a purpose, and what do we want to achieve in the energy sector. So we've come up with the policy. We think we can be able to do that, and we've come up with the National Energy Authority as the independent regulator of power. So PNG Power looks after the company, and so they come under the SOE. So as minister, my job is to make sure that what can we do to make PNG Power also become reliable, efficient?
And how is it going to make power in PNG more reliable and efficient?
Basically, what we are doing is that we are trying to demystify the myth that only PNG Power can provide power in Papua New Guinea. So with the new regulations, companies, private sector, districts, associations, they can come to the National Energy Authority and they can apply for licenses to generate power, licenses for transmission, licenses for retail, license for distribution. So those are licenses that we can, we and me as the Minister for Energy we can issue licenses. So instead of us as a country waiting for PNG Power to power up our rural districts, you know, many of our districts remain without electricity for so long, some since 1975. So under the new regulations, we have been given licenses, and the idea is that you know, the commercial realities of our districts and little towns and smaller towns that PNG Power does not operate in, we can be able to partner, work together, give them licenses. They can be able to look at commercial realities, and they can be able to generate power in and it can come in different forms.
Can you elaborate on that? What are the different forms?
They can look at hydro solutions, mini hydro. They can look at solar solutions. Solar, we highly recommend it because it's highly, you know, you can deploy it easily, cost effective, and easy to deploy. And so those are options that we can look under the deregulated space. So that's something that we are pushing, and we've been working with our partners, you know, the multilateral organizations, the World Bank, the IMF, ADB, they're all interested in this space. And also our foreign partners like the Australian government, New Zealand government, Japanese government, Chinese government, they're also keen on helping us in this sector.
This news that Papua New Guinea's energy minister is moving towards renewables is music to Manu Rawali's ears. It's a solution that he's been hoping for and says PNG is uniquely set up to be powered by solar and hydro.
Almost every location in PNG is good for solar. The only solar mini-grid we have in the country is up at Kompien. This is in the mountains of Enga province. And it's working perfectly, like for the last decade, over a decade. Like just looking at those experiences, solar, it could be easily integrated into the grid. That could be done in any location. Solar is easily accessible in many, almost all locations in Papua New Guinea. It's just a matter of, you know, having the funding, having the land, and just working to integrate them.
But despite that hope, after many decades of promises and little change, he remains skeptical about what will come of it.
So I think it's a step in the right direction. But keep in mind, in the last decade, we've had reform papers accepted, signed off at the NEC level. Oh, we're going to reform the electricity. We're going to reform the election. It's been papers signed off in the, three, four, five papers in the NEC, and nothing has eventuated. We've been thinking, like every new minister comes in or every new CEO comes in, I'm going to solve the problem. But our problem hasn't, like, it's not the CEO. It's just the structure of it to me. It's just the structure that the utility, the sector is in, that's leading to this. So for me, no amount of money poured in, no amount of overseas expertise poured in is going to resolve PNG Power's issue. Sorry, that's a very, how would I put, pessimistic view, but I don't know if that's the right term I use, but there's unfortunately, with all these resources poured in, it's not going to solve our blackouts. I think we need it needs a structural change for us to see some light to resolving the blackout issues, improving reliability, and I think more importantly, start increasing electricity access.
As Papua New Guineans wait for reliable power, the blackouts will continue impacting the very foundations of a country, like its education system.
My name is Miss Joy Asimre. I'm a lecturer at the University of Goloka, and I'm attached to the School of Education.
Joy is 60 years old and has been a teacher all her working life and now works at the University of Goloka. And over the course of her career, she says the blackouts have made life incredibly hard for teachers and their students.
I think it's a distraction to the education of our citizens, especially the young population, the students, because of what it causes. You know, when you are in the middle of your lesson doing a PowerPoint presentation, the power goes off. And the students are sort of, you know, when the standby generator doesn't come on quickly, that lesson is wasted.
The power outages come without any warning, and in an urban center, they might happen twice a week. But out in remote parts of PNG, the schools and the communities can be without power for days.
In other parts of Papua New Guinea, like New Island, some of our lecturers went there. They saw that, you know, they receive power only twice a week. It's rationed. Only twice a week, so they were sharing the experiences and telling us that it's really worse in New Island. Only maybe Tuesdays and Fridays, power will come on. The other days, there's no power.
Joy says without a stable learning environment, the future of PNG hangs in the balance.
The question is, I think, the backbone for PNG and any country at all. Education is very, very important for building up Papua New Guinea because we need to train the younger generation with the knowledge and skills they require in all sectors of our country.
Papua New Guinea is a country rich in energy resources, yet trapped in a cycle of blackouts, with hospitals scrambling to keep patients alive, businesses losing money, everyday life thrown into uncertainty. The PNG government says it's working on a solution, but will it come in time? And will it be enough? Power isn't just about electricity, it's about stability, security, and survival. Polytalk is hosted by me, Scott Waide. Our producer is Kunta Marie Crofts. Our supervising producer is Jordan Fennell. And our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu, Inga Stunzna. Coming up next week on Polytalk.
You know, I really didn't expect it to be arrested or the police to front up at my place.
At 7 a.m., police came to Eddie Tanago's house. He was arrested in front of his wife and kids for sharing a Facebook post.
So when I went in, I was being told that I had a complaint filed against me by a senior public official for posting his image without his consent. I understood a bit about the Cybercrime Act from a layman's perspective generally, but my arrest really made me to be more aware of the law itself, and it was really a huge surprise, because in the last 17 years of working on the issue, I was never been arrested and charged. It got me by surprise and even made me think if I'm really doing the right thing. It was really challenging for me personally and my family.
In the next episode of Polytalk, I will take a look at PNG's Cybercrime Act and ask the question, are these laws being used to protect or punish?
Papua New Guinea is a country that is proud to have a free press, and its constitution's provisions on freedom of expression and other human rights are quite explicit. So I was a bit surprised that, you know, this happened.
On Polytalk with me, Scott Waide. Tuesday, 9 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or wherever you get your podcasts.